Radio EcoShock.
Last week on Radio EcoShock, we revealed terrible news. Big banks are financing a new surge of climate-killing fossil fuels. But the banks are dwarfed by institutional investors, including your pension funds, university endowments, insurance giants, and more. We're talking about trillions of dollars poured into more oil, gas, and coal. It is midnight for climate change. Do you know where your money is? You can find out, thanks to a new free online database created by a coalition of nonprofit groups. We can find out where financial power really lives. Our guide is Katrin Ganswit, head of finance research for the famous German environment group Ergewald. We are in good hands. From Germany, Katrin Ganswit, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're really welcome. I'm glad to have you. When we talked last November, you warned oil, gas, and coal companies have announced enough expansion to break the future. Is that coming true? Is there really a surge in fossil fuel expansion right now when we need it least?
So the surge in fossil fuel expansion didn't stop so far, even if we announced as NGOs that it really needs to stop, and not only us, yeah, climate science, even the International Energy Agency says so, but we don't see especially oil and gas companies stopping to explore for new oil and gas resources. They're still on it.
Okay, and how much fossil fuel investment money are we talking about with your report?
So in our report, we identified more than $3 trillion U.S. dollars held by asset managers, banks, also pension funds, insurance companies, retirement schemes from all over the world.
And just to understand, are the big oil and gas companies expanding existing sites, or are they exploring and developing more production across the world?
Unfortunately, they do both. So first of all, there is something which we call short-term expansion. So this is reserves which will come into production pretty soon, depending on the kind of reserve, in a year, in 3 years, maybe in 7 years for very complicated forms of production, but before 2030, definitely. That's on the one hand. That's what, yeah, more than 90% of the companies in the oil and gas sector are doing. And then additionally, most of the companies are still also looking for new oil and gas resources. So for resources which will only come into production in the long term, in a time where the reduction of fossil fuel use should have happened already. That's for oil and gas. For coal, it's a bit less, especially if you look for new reserves, depending on what kind of expansion you're looking at. Let's say maybe it's less than half of the industry. So there we definitely see a decline in the coal industry, but oil and gas is still going ahead like they used to.
And a key question becomes, who is providing countless billions of dollars to expand oil and gas from the Arctic to the Amazon, and who is in control of that money? Why don't we begin with what you call the terrible two? Who are they, and why do their decisions matter to the world?
The terrible two are, in fact, two U.S. companies and the biggest two private asset managers on this planet. It's Vanguard and BlackRock. And it is in this order, despite BlackRock being the biggest asset manager and Vanguard, so to say, only number two. So Vanguard is the number one fossil fuel investor. And that fits very well because Vanguard made very clear that they don't think divestment does make any sense for them, and they also walked away from the Net Zero Asset Manager Alliance they've been part of so far. BlackRock, on the other hand, in a way they're only second, but it's not a big difference. It's around $5 billion U.S. dollars, which is not a lot for them. BlackRock is usually, so Larry Fink, as part of the Glasgow Financial Alliance Initiative, they usually talk about being more progressive, more green, being fit in ESG, but in the end, they're still the second biggest investor in fossil fuels. And if you look at coal developers, so companies which are still building new power plants or creating new mines, here BlackRock is actually the number one investor.
Yeah, some of those companies play a game where they say, well, we're not investing in coal mining, but, oh, yes, we are lending a lot of money to coal power companies and transportation companies and all the other parts of that chain.
Yeah, that's true. So they say not coal. I mean, BlackRock has a coal policy implemented a coal policy, but it was only directed to revenues from thermal coal mining, so a very particular part of the coal industry and one which, especially at the time where this policy was implemented, was not really doing good. Metallurgical coal you could still make money with, but making money with thermal coal was really hard at that time, and a few U.S. coal mining companies were also on the rim of bankruptcy, Peabody, I think, being the most well-known. So you felt it was more an argument of BlackRock to get rid of assets which were not doing good anyway and, painting themselves green at the same time. And we had a look back then when Larry Fink announced this divestment. We had a look at how big this share from the coal industry was, and we reached at about, depending on how you count it, 17-18%. So less than 20% of the industry was what BlackRock committed to divest from. And anyway, they only divested from their actively managed funds. So everything which was passive investment, which is the biggest share of BlackRock's business, was not taken into account anyway.
All kinds of climate games being played by these companies while they claim to be green.
So, of course, it's a question of good reputation if you're climate friendly or not. The general understanding, even if there's, of course, counterparts or people would say something else, but the general understanding in the sphere of science, in the sphere of civil society, and also in the sphere of financial industry is clear, okay, there needs to be some climate commitments to still be part of the game. How these climate commitments are and how impactful they are, that's though really the question. And we still think the Glasgow Financial Alliance on Net Zero is a good example because it started off as a tricky but maybe promising initiative, UN convened but industry led, and NGOs had different ideas if this initiative would mean anything and would lead to anything, but we were hopeful. But so far we don't see a lot of progress. We see, as said, important participants with a big volume like Vanguard walking away from the initiative, last but not least also because of the anti-ESG laws in the United States. That's at least what they say. And we don't see a big impact. We still see the big investors and banks supporting the fossil industry, and they usually try to calculate their emissions and then talk about emission reductions, but clear cuts, divestment after, let it be some time of engagement, but then a clear time where you say, now in this case we have to divest if the company hasn't a good transition plan. You don't see this for the oil and gas industry especially.
So the investigation by your consortium of concern groups found 23 big institutional investors provided about half of all the investments on fossil fuel companies. We think climate will be decided by politicians. That's the game. But really, the CEOs and stockholders of just 23 companies could be in control of our future. We should know who they are. And does your new project help us find that out?
Yeah, definitely. Although, first of all, as you mentioned, our webpage on investinginclimatechaos.org, you can find a report where you easily find the top investors, and they're displayed. Many of them are from the U.S., but you also find pension funds like the pension fund from Japan or Norway on the list, and the National Pension Service of Korea, the Life Insurance Corporation of India, and also if you look at the U.S. companies, even though they're private, some of them, like, for example, the TIAA is a pension scheme in the end. So, yes, these companies don't only hold the money for your retirement, but they also decide to invest it into something which destroys the future of the planet and definitely also an easygoing retirement. So you have this overview on our webpage, but you also have a place where you can explore the data and look for the country of your interest, for the kind of company of your interest, for the investor of your interest, and can really check out what the companies in your country or the investor where you might have your retirement money is invested in.
Yes, you talk about national pension funds. And, you know, in the U.S., investors account for about 64% of investing in fossil fuel companies, according to your great big study. And it appears like America alone could save the world climate from outright disaster if those investment companies would agree and act responsibly. But it seems like the government is split, the population is split. Do you see hope that Americans are going to come around and really act to save the climate through these money flows?
Good question. As you said, it is split. And I mentioned already this anti-ESG law in the U.S. where you already see impacts basically on a global level because you had all the discussion of this, you have the discussion within the networks of the GFINS Alliance of can American banks still be committed if they have this pressure in their home country. And let's say, of course, Americans still can. I mean, we'll see what future brings, but we definitely hope also American society, the majority of American society, will in the end support climate law if they see the impacts. And, I mean, the U.S. is a country which sees the impacts. Many parts of the U.S. see droughts, see flood. They actually see what climate change is doing, and that's why I'm hopeful at some point also U.S. Americans, like I hope the same here for everyone in Europe, will understand there need to be changes in the system, how we work, how we invest, where we put our money, and how we frame our industry if we want to stop runaway climate change.
I remember a few years ago, Greenpeace Germany put up billboards with faces of executives they called climate criminals. And maybe it's time for some new billboards and social media campaigns to put faces on the companies that you outline in your report. Does that sound too extreme?
No, I don't think that sounds too extreme to me. I mean, the conditions we are at right now are really extreme, and I think that means extreme measures are needed to have a quick change. I mean, the changes we need don't only need to be quick, they also need to be tremendous, and they need to be more tremendous the less time we have. So you have to have impactful campaigns. And yes, I do think that the CEOs, the heads, the leadership of all these investors we're talking about have more opportunity than they admit in changing the way they invest. And this will, of course, mean, as you especially also talk about the American population, not all of the citizens will be happy about it, and maybe not all of the customers will be happy about it, and maybe some will walk to a more climate criminal investor. But the more investors and the more banks which walk on the climate path and start walking away from fossil fuel companies, the less space there will be for these companies to just go to a different funder. And I believe that this is possible. Otherwise, I wouldn't do my job.
We talked about pension savings, and that really worries me because people are trying to save for their old age, but their old age may be wrecked by climate disasters one after another, and it's even worse for their kids if they ever hope to leave some money to their kids. And, you know, your retirement plan in America, the 401k, you're kind of forced through a government action to be investing in stocks, and this money flows up to BlackRock and up to Vanguard and other investment funds. Is there anything that ordinary workers can do to stop funding destruction of their own future with their saving money?
Yeah, I think therefore you might need to explain a bit more about the retirement scheme in the U.S. because I would say you look for a different provider in Europe. I'm not sure. This sounded like you're stuck if you're working for a specific company. You're stuck with their retirement scheme.
But you could get together with the other workers and say, look, these are our terms. No money goes to climate wrecking. That's the best I've got. I'm going to look up some more about pension activism in the U.S. because it gets really complicated, because when people die younger, and they will die younger with climate change, life insurance companies make less money, but the pension funds, they have to pay out less when clients die younger. So climate deaths actually save them money. So it's a conflict, a real conflict for any pension fund to finance products that is deadly for its clients. And I don't hear people talking about this.
Okay. So what should workers do is first they should make it public. They should talk about it. They should bring it out there so more of their colleagues know about it, and then they can get together and do something against it and say, we don't like these conditions which are killing our future, or maybe us, or at least our children. We want to have our retirement money invested in something which is keeping our future. And this would be the answer.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock. My guest is Katrin Ganswit, head of finance research for the German environment group Urgewald. And we are talking about their new big list of companies investing in climate chaos. What about the big investment hub in London? Are the European investors part of this climate killing game that you report on?
Yeah, of course they are. You saw more and more progressive coal exclusion policies in Europe. You could definitely see there is a movement. We also see first oil and gas policies slowly emerging. Here the insurance industry has really been at the front of everything. But especially when it comes to oil and gas, with a focus on that, there's hardly any good policy out there. And as you said, the big investment hub London is still within Europe number one. So you say, as you rightly said, 64% of all investments coming from U.S. companies, but the second biggest share is actually coming from Europe, and within Europe it's coming from the U.K., so basically from London. And number one here is Legal & General from London, who is the biggest investor in the UK. But if you look at whole Europe, the biggest investor is actually, again, a pension fund, the pension fund of Norway. The pension fund of Norway also did a big coal divestment. They didn't capture the full coal industry, but at least this was really impactful also for other investors to go ahead after, especially the Nordic investors. But Norway's pension fund so far has no intention to move out of oil and gas, and therefore they're still big in the game. They're with almost $60 billion US dollar, they're Europe's biggest fossil fuel investor.
Katrin, tell us more about the Investing in Climate Chaos website and how to use it.
Yeah, of course. So at investinginclimatechaos.org, you can obviously first see a bit of an overview. What are the main messages we want to bring across? Some nice graphs to make it easier to digest. But then really the centerpiece of our website is our data research mask, where you can look for any individual company or investor in the scope of our research. You can look only at oil and gas, where the information is derived from our own data from the Global Oil and Gas Exit List. You can as well just look at coal, where the data is derived from our own Global Coal Exit List. So this is our own databases where this is coming from. But you can also, for example, look up all investors in oil and gas stemming from the U.S. if you want. You can filter by country, by region, yeah, by type of investment. So you can really look up whatever you find interesting. And, of course, you have an extensive methodology which explains everything you need to know and our contact details in case you even want to know more.
I think this is a big breakthrough because so much of this information was hidden. There are private contracts between businesses and the public doesn't need to know, but the public really does need to know if we're going to be getting a whole lot more gas and oil down the pipeline. What brought this project going and who else is helping you with it?
What brought this project going was, first of all, that we in the past just looked at the coal industry and now we wanted to have the full picture and really talk about all fossil fuels. We have there's a network of NGOs who's working on finance, not only on banks. With our sister publication, Banking on Climate Chaos, did the job a week earlier. But also on investors, especially on pension funds, but also on specific asset managers. So all these people really liked our coal data and wanted to work with it. So we wanted to bring more information out there on oil and gas investments as well for other parts of the network to just look up whatever they want to know. We are always sending out tables for specific countries, specific campaigns. So whoever, which part ever of the civil society who wants to work on finance, we always provide them with the information we have. But apart from that, we also wanted to have something which everybody can just easily look up without waiting for us. So really, we have 24 co-publishers for this publication, and their wish and need to have this data. But the research we didn't do alone. As first of all, as said, we have our global oil and gas exit list and our global coal exit list as basic resources for the data, and bringing these industry lists into life was just doable because of a network of NGOs which supported us anyway. On the other hand, we're looking at the financing side. So the financial data is basically drawn from financial commercial databases, which is usually used by the finance industry. So we turn around the use of this finance database and use it for our own purpose. And because accessing this database is complicated and super expensive, we do that together with Profundo, which is a not-for-profit company in the Netherlands. Yeah, last but not least, there's another important NGO partner, which is called Reclaim Finance, and they show the other side of the story. While we show the numbers, they show the policies of the investors we are ranking in our database. And if you look up an investor in our database, for example, Vanguard or BlackRock, you can also find a direct link to their oil, gas, and coal policy tools, and you can see how the policies of these investors are ranked, and you also find a direct link to their own publications.
I'm sorry, I missed the name of the group that has these policy recommendations.
This is Reclaim Finance.
Reclaim Finance.
So this is basically the counterpart to our data, is their policy analysis, and that's why we refer to each other. We do the finance data and they do the policy analysis, and we do a bit both, of course, but we try to split up specialties.
Katrin, as we wrap up here, what are the next steps for you and for Urgewald?
I mean, the next direct step concerning research is going to be, we are already researching for the annual updates of our global coal exit list and our global oil and gas exit list, so that we have new industry numbers so that we can also do new and fresh finance research. And the next planned research is a banks research on coal, on the whole coal industry and on all banks on the planet. Yeah, and we will talk and discuss more with our colleagues from the Rainforest Action Network on how we can do the next year's Banking on Climate Chaos and Investing in Climate Chaos studies even better and even more useful for civil society.
From Germany, we've been speaking with financial investigator Katrin Ganswit from the environment group Urgewald. Katrin is part of a whole team of nonprofit groups developing a huge file of over 6,000 companies financing fossil fuel expansion around the world. Get access to all of that at www.investinginclimatechaos.org. Check out my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org for more links to follow up. Katrin, thank you for shining a light on these real-time climate profiteers.
Thank you for the invitation, and thanks for your interest.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.